This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the MVP studios, and thanks for tuning in. Growing up, I remember rushing home from school for my favorite cartoons, shows like Batman, the animated series, X-Men, Tiny Toons, Animaniacs, and, you know, a host of others were a major part of my childhood. But nowadays, you don't see as many cartoons as you once did. Joining me to explain why Saturday morning cartoons declined and instead turned into actual networks is former president of Cartoon Network and founder and president of Snyder Media Group, Stuart Snyder. Thanks for joining me, Stuart.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure.
Man, I looked at your resume, and it's extensive. My God, you worked at WWE, Field Entertainment. I mean, you've been everywhere. But before we get into all that, how did you get into becoming a COO for companies?
I really give credit to how I started my career, my business career, which was in my family business. I worked in my father's music store. From there, I've kind of learned everything that you should know about business, sales, marketing, finance, promotion. I could go on and on. It was it really was a 360 perspective. So I took it all in, went to college. I was a business major. And then I knew that I wanted to be in the entertainment field and started my career with MGM UA, and it was off to the races. And before I blinked, it was a lot of years later, and I've had a wonderful time, a great career, and worked with a lot of wonderful people.
I'm just looking at some of the stuff you've done, and you worked at Turner Broadcasting, where you were the one who wanted to acquisition the WCW, which, if anybody knows about wrestling, like, that was like, it was either WWF or WCW, and that's amazing. Like, kudos for you.
Well, it was interesting because I've been fortunate. I worked for both companies at different parts of my career. I had worked at Turner Broadcasting in the 90s, where WCW was an important part of our portfolio, and worked on that brand and helped to develop that brand, working with Ted and the company. And then I found myself working with Vince McMahon at WWF at the time, called WWF. And one of my highlights of my time with WWF, and also known WWE, was ending up going and purchasing WCW from Turner Broadcasting and bringing it into WWE. So that was an exciting time. I think it was that battle between WWE and WCW was fun and exciting. And at the end of the day, it was fun to go and rewarding to be able to buy it, the brand and the business from Turner, and bring it into the WWE organization.
Man, for a lot of people out there, they've heard of CEOs and CFOs, but what exactly does a COO do?
So a COO is short for Chief Operating Officer. The best way of looking at a COO is you're responsible for keeping the trains running on time, setting direction and vision for a company, and working with all of the different areas, departments, and key leadership and management teams of an organization. So that's kind of what the COO role is.
Man, just from looking from what you've done, the vision and direction portion, that's something that it seems like you have an expertise on almost.
Well, it's certainly one of the areas that I think I bring to an organization, I've brought to an organization. I usually find myself working with companies that were at certain points in their times looking in terms of what's the next step. And I find it very rewarding to go into those situations and those companies, because you get to work with people who are very passionate about the business, and they are wanting and thriving to get to that next milestone, that next level for the organization. Sometimes it means change. Sometimes it means dynamic growth. Sometimes it means how do we increase revenues or what other businesses should we be in. But it's a time of reflection, change, and growth. And I love working with those type of teams and companies.
I see that you worked at Cartoon Network / Boomerang, and you helped with the creation of new shows. Is that part of, like, the growth strategy?
Yeah, I had the great fortune of becoming the president and COO of Cartoon Network, which includes Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, and Boomerang. I ran the what's called the animation young adults and kids business for Turner, and that was that assignment was very interesting. It was on one hand for Cartoon Network. At that time, it was how do we make Cartoon Network popular again? It had lost a little bit of its shine, its audience. It was struggling a little bit. So how do we make Cartoon Network more relevant to the kid audience that we were charged with speaking to? Adult Swim, the assignment was really to make sure that we continue marching on in our number one position for young adults. And Boomerang was our classic animation cable network. And how do we figure out a path to grow that cable network? So it was a great, rich assignment with the same yet three distinct elements of strategies that we needed to develop and implement.
Okay, so man, that I'm geeking out over your resume, man, because what's so cool about it is that you, when it comes to Boomerang, it has some classic, I mean, really classic, like 1950s, 1960s cartoons.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But when it comes to, like, my generation, I actually grew up, well, not only off Scooby-Doo and all the old stuff, but when it comes to the 90s cartoons, a lot of it was, like, Warner. So there's Animaniacs, Tiny Toon Adventures, Freakazoid, like, I could keep going on. And how come those weren't implemented into Boomerang?
So I can't speak to specifics on why, you know, a certain show, there could be a thousand different reasons. But Boomerang was set up really as from a classic standpoint at the time for the Hanna-Barbera library. So you're thinking Scooby-Doo, Tom and Jerry. It was really to go and mine that library and create that classic animation. Why a certain cartoon or series didn't make it on Boomerang or not. Over the years, shows did show up on Boomerang and then they would rotate off. That was just about keeping the network fresh. Also, a lot of those shows ended up on Cartoon Network. So we would have shows premiere on Cartoon Network and then move over to Boomerang. And then, as you certainly know, one of the key assignments for all of those networks from a Cartoon Network and Adult Swim was really creating new shows. And that's what you know, we really focused on over the years to make sure there was new shows, new great content out there for this generation of kids.
Well,
and adults for Adult Swim.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm one of those adults. When it comes to the cartoons, like on Cartoon Network, sometimes they'll just finish their run. You know, you have Ben 10 and Foster's Imaginary House. I forgot the name of it, but I called it Foster's.
Great show, by the way, Foster's.
Yes, it was. I really loved it, and I like that it ended with a movie. It's so often cartoons are left on the table and then just nothing ever happens to it. But it's always nice where Cartoon Network and Adult Swim, they'll finish it and that'll be it. Like Samurai Jack, Adult Swim finished
it. Samurai Jack is a great example, right?
Well, and that's the thing I was going to talk about. Like, they'll finish the shows and then it'll almost reboot them. I kind of feel like, why ruin something that was already just, it was good enough. One of the shows is Teen Titans. You know, I figured it was really good. They ended it again with a movie, and then they rebooted it a few years ago as Teen Titans
Go.
Why do that when it's already kind of finished?
Well, I mean, the reality is that, especially in the kids business, when you're dealing with shows like Teen Titans or the second generation Teen Titans Go, or even Ben 10, the wonderful thing about the format of animation is that you are able to, for that generation of kids, do a show that is their own show, that they like, they enjoy. They may or may not like the older generation, even the older shows, even though with animation, there's a new generation of kids every, let's call it 5 years, okay? But once you create a show and you have content and a brand in your catalog, you do look for ways to bring that show back, either as a current show, and then you'll have like Adventure Time, a great 9-year run, which, you know, fantastic. And the same with regular show. Those were shows that we did under my tenure at Cartoon Network, and then including Teen Titans Go. But you have to do shows that are really for that generation. And when you talk about Teen Titans specifically, Teen Titans, the first generation, was very much, and I hope you agree with this, very much an action show, right?
Yeah.
Very much of an action show. The new Teen Titans Go, while still being action, has a little bit more humor, has a little bit more whimsical to it, and that really is because of this generation of kids want to see more humor, want to enjoy a little bit of a whimsical with their action. So that really was just going back on a creative opportunity to update the brand and the show for today's generation.
I'm a little curious, how important are toy sales to, connected to a show? Does it give any merit to it or no?
The kids' business is, from an action show perspective, fundamental, or the toy sales and consumer products are an important element. But first and foremost, I will tell you what we always focused on was really making the best show possible. If it was an action show, we would think about what other line extensions or businesses could come out of that show. But if that show wasn't a good show and it wasn't attracting an audience and kids were enjoying it, it didn't matter what else was happening. It wasn't going to work. But if you have a hit show and a popular show, kids want to identify with that show. They want to role play. They want to play with either characters or have a play pattern coming out of a show. So they want to do that. So that was an important element, especially on from an action show standpoint. On a comedy, there may be less opportunity from a toy perspective, but there are more wearables and merchandise elements to it as well. So, again, it's just a matter of finding the best show possible, developing the best show possible, and then finding toy extensions or consumer products extensions from the show.
I like the answer. I love it because I when it comes down to it, it's the show that matters, not necessarily the toys. But the reason I asked, the only reason I was thinking of that is because of the Power Rangers. They've been on for so long, and I don't think they've ever missed like a year. There's always a new Power Rangers, whether they're in space or somewhere else. And man, they're toys. They're always bringing out new toys. And I was just curious in correlation, like if Power Rangers ever fell through, would the toys fall too?
Well, you know, I think that there's a perfect example, though, of an action show and very much driven by toys. So, but I've always taken the route that toy sales are important, certainly from a kid's perspective and a kid's business, but it still has to start with the content. It still has to start with the show, and it has to be a fun, entertaining show for kids.
Well, we expect a lot of cartoons to be on Cartoon Network and, you know, Boomerang and all the other Adult Swim. But how come CBS, you know, Fox, WGN, even a lot of them just they stopped airing Saturday morning cartoons? Why do you think it transitioned to that? Because I think now it's just like preschool stuff.
Yeah, it's evolved over time, and it's taken a long time to get here. But I think the reality is, and there's no one single answer, but it's a few things. First of all, the government came out in the 90s and established that there needed to be an educational block on broadcast networks. Then they really enforced it. So the broadcasters had to find that educational block. And frankly, a lot of cartoons were not educational in nature. So I think the broadcasters had to take a hard look at that and say, what do we do here? And that's why you saw a lot of live-action shows go on, which were educational in nature, and the cartoons came off. I think the other element is that you had Cartoon Network come into the marketplace and onto television, Nickelodeon, Disney, XD. And frankly, you can find cartoons now in a lot of different places than just on broadcast television. So the audience became fragmented. The advertising dollars, the kids' business, really the kids weren't watching broadcast as much as they once were. before the cable networks. So the audience started shifting away from broadcast. And once that audience started shifting away, combined with the fact that the broadcasters had to air educational content, the advertising dollars soon followed away from the broadcasters. So it was, it sounds, maybe I'm trying to simplify this for you, but I think it was really a convergence of various elements coming together on why cartoons are really not watched, are not seen on broadcast, except for preschool, which I don't think anybody would argue is not educational. Preschool cartoons are educational. And that's what you would see on the broadcasters at this point. And you'll find the regular cartoons and the pure entertainment cartoons on the cable networks, on over-the-top services, on the internet, and that's where you'll find them.
I remember that with especially one episode of Animaniacs where, God, was it Yakko who did the song of Where Every Country Was? And, you know, sometimes they would have a little skit of like Wheel of Morality, what we're going to learn today. Mm-hmm. And that was part of it, huh, where they had to teach somebody and they would make it a joke even in the show where, hey, right. You know, I got to teach you something. Here's 2 seconds.
Yeah. Well, certainly I will tell you there are absolutely situations where producers or distribution companies would argue or say their show was educational. See? It has elements, and they try to rationalize it to justify it in the broadcast block. Sometimes that works, sometimes it didn't, if you know what I mean.
With the success of Adult Swim, do you think that they'll ever bring back, like, cartoons for adults, maybe, or like a nostalgia thing?
Well, I think that there's a lot of cartoons for adults on Adult Swim now. I mean, one of the things I'm most proud of, when I joined Cartoon Network and I went there, Adult Swim started at 11 o'clock at night. And through the time that I was there, we actually moved Adult Swim to start at 8 o'clock. And Adult Swim, one of their greatest shows right now and one of their most popular was developed and produced when I was there. It's called Rick and Morty. And Rick and Morty is one of their great successes and adult-oriented show. We know that Family Guy also airs on Adult Swim. So Squidbillies is on Adult Swim. And I would characterize all of those as cartoons and animation for adults.
Well, I meant like giving it its own channel, because right now it just has a block. Like I remember King of the Hill, and then it goes into like a bunch. But I mean, do you think they have enough content to have their own channel, or are they okay as a block?
You know, it's really viewed as a separate channel. Starting at 8 o'clock, Adult Swim takes over that what I call the animation feed of cartoon and goes until 6 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, we've always, inside the company, we always treat Adult Swim, and frankly, the industry treats Adult Swim as a network. If over the years, the company has looked many times at whether or not it made sense to give it what I call its own real estate as a network, its own channel. And frankly, it's a great marriage of having Cartoon Network and Adult Swim together. Really works best for, and has been working best for Turner and for Time Warner. The one thing that is changing now, though, is frankly OTT services, and the Adult Swim's content is out on, I believe it's Hulu right now. And also, they have AdultSwim.com, which is airing a lot of episodes as well online. So that world is changing a little bit of, what does it mean to have your own channel today? Do you have to have a cable channel, or can you get the content over the top and streamed as more and more content providers are doing?
One of the things I remember on Cartoon Network was Toonami, and they took it away and then brought it back. I mean, well, what led to that decision?
Yeah, I was sitting in the chair when we made that very tough decision. You know, candidly, one of the things, Toonami was a very, and I think we're talking about the late 2000s. Because I joined Cartoon in 2007. It was a very tough decision, a fan base that was very, very passionate about Toonami. The cold hard facts were at the time is we were in the business of really reinventing Cartoon Network and jumpstarting it again for kids. And the Toonami block on Cartoon Network just was not drawing a large enough audience. It just was simply about numbers. And we tried to figure out how to keep it on the air, but at the end of the day, we needed that block of time to come with all the new shows that we had, that we planned on doing, and also to draw back a kid audience. And we warehoused Toonami for a period of time and then brought it back on Adult Swim. Because, frankly, it fit better on Adult Swim in today's world than it actually fit at that time on Cartoon Network, which was a network for kids. So, so tough decision, but at the end of the day, the right decision for the network and ultimately Toonami and Adult Swim.
You're right about that, because I do enjoy watching all the anime on Saturday, so
yep.
Much better than it being in the afternoon.
Yeah, and what Cartoon Network needed to do is get back and grow its kids audience, because that's what drove the business of Cartoon Network. And Toonami, at the end of the day, is going to fit much better on Adult Swim.
When it comes to streaming, do you think that that's going to be the next area when it comes to not just cartoons, but TV in general?
Well, I think we're seeing it already. I think that you know, you look at how many subscribers Netflix have, and you look at Amazon, and you look at Hulu, and you look at kids' patterns of watching, I call it content. I don't even, you know, television now means so much more than just turning on a television or your cable box. It means basically you're watching content on any device, anytime, anywhere. So I think it's changed how kids watch television, or watch programming. I think it's changed the way adults watch programming. So between on-demand and streaming, I think it has changed the world, and there's no going backwards. It's only going forward in the changing dynamics. So, yeah, it's going to have more implications and for the business of television and media. The one thing I will say, though, with all of the changes that are happening, there is more great television and content today than ever before.
Absolutely.
And that's the beautiful thing about more platforms and more choice.
Yes, because everybody knows that content is king.
It still is at the end of the day. But today, instead of just going and turning on your television and getting maybe 500 channels or whatever number of channels, you literally can turn on a cable or go to many different platforms to view content. And you're in control versus people bringing it to you. And that's a very important dynamic now, that you can watch things anywhere at any time on any device, and you can pick and choose what you want to watch instead of just passively waiting for 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock or a cartoon or something to run at 7 p.m. You're able to see it anytime you want. So I think the world keeps changing.
What have you been up to lately? Are you CEO of another company, or?
So yeah, no, I've been doing a lot of things. After I left Cartoon Network, I'm presently in the middle of producing two plays, which is a little different than cartoons, but I am enjoying it. I like the creative process. I'm producing a play called The Exorcist, which is going to open up on the West End in London in October of this year. That's based on William Peter Blatty's book and the very famous and successful movie. So that play opens. Also working on a revival of a play and a movie. It'll be a play called Agnes of God, which we hope to bring to Broadway in 2018. Those are my play adventures that I'm focused on. On the media side, on the television side, I'm working on two exciting projects. The first is a television show based on the very popular kids' property called Little Critter. Little Critter is a book series written by Mercer Mayer. It sold hundreds of millions of books over the last 40 years. Never been a television show before, and bringing it to TV, an animated show, and that will be a preschool show, preschool and toddler show. That'll be in 2018 is what we're planning. And right now I'm working on the relaunch of an old television show, a classic show called Wonderama, where I'm providing strategic guidance to that team. And the first batch of episodes have already aired, and the second grouping of episodes are going to be premiering this fall. So I'm helping with the launch of Wonderama, and I'm consulting with several companies on their media plans. And last but not least, on the more entrepreneurial front, I am a co-owner in a lobster pier in Maine, and that's called Beale's Lobster Pier in Southwest Harbor, Maine. So after Cartoon Network and Turner, I've been enjoying the entrepreneurial and content world and also finding some time to enjoy life. So it's been great.
Oh, wow. Man, so many questions. Oh, geez. The first one is The Exorcist. Have you seen it yet? Well, you've probably already seen them in production, right? Like doing it?
We actually, we already produced the show. It actually ran in Birmingham, UK, for 2 weeks earlier. So the way it works in the UK is we played it at the Birmingham Repertory Theater in Birmingham, UK. And then it had a successful run there. It did very well at the box office. It got very good reviews. And that's enabling us now to bring it to the West End. We're partnered with the Kenwright Organization in the UK, and they will be opening the show at the Phoenix Theater. I think the date is October 21st. So we've already produced the show. It had its run. Now it's going to the West End. And, you know, we expect it to be successful there. And then our goal is to bring it to the States, to Broadway, in 2018.
Oh, my God. I would love to see that in a theater because
it's a great piece of drama and thrills and scares.
Absolutely.
yeah, it really is. It works on the stage. It's very dramatic. You know, it's a play about, while it is known for about horror, it's really about faith. And the horror is, of course, is included because of the subject matter, but it is a 90-minute journey exploring someone's faith. And it did very well in Birmingham, and we're really feeling good about the run in London on the West End this fall. We start working on Broadway after that.
Oh, man, I hope it does well because I'll be one of the first when it comes to the States. I'll be the first to see it because I love the book, the movie, everything about it. I really like The Exorcist. And to see it in the play would be so interesting because how could they do some of the things that was in the book and the movie in like a live action would be very cool to see.
Yes, and I can tell you we do them.
I'm going to love to see that crab walk. I'm not going to lie. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you being here. Man, just a slew of information just came from you. And thanks, man.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MASONVERAPAINE.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.